And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Entertainment live on 1480 AM KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Dave Isaac alongside Joseph J. Erdo. And you do sound like better. Santa Claus. Greg Isaac has left the building. Maybe he's Elvis Presley. Eric Reinert in and behind the glass. Trisha will be in here shortly. And in the glass.
Wow, in the glass.
The guy, Linda, the producer in the glass.
Ira, okay. Santa Claus, Night When Santa Went Crazy by Weird Al Yankovic took us into this segment, of course.
I like it.
Me too. And of course, tonight Santa is going to go crazy as well.
Oh, yes, at Santarchy. I may try to show up on that one. Yes. And joining us right now, someone I've known since, can you believe it, 1980, my good friend who has transformed himself from an attorney and a CPA to a celebrity diner, but he's still an attorney and a CPA, David Chan. David, how are you?
Fine. It's great to be on your show, Dave. And, you know, who would have imagined back in 1980 when you and I were boy accountants? And
yeah.
You ordered your favorite dish, twice cooked pork, over at Hunan Taste Restaurant.
Yeah.
That decades later, I'd be on your radio program talking about the time that you ordered twice cooked pork at Hunan.
That's amazing. You remember that because.
You're unforgettable.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Because that was incredible. I used to always order twice cooked pork. Yeah. We used to go to a lot of Chinese restaurants. Can we mention the name? Yeah, we can mention the name of the firm.
Yeah, they're probably all out of business now anyway.
Yeah, but Kenneth Leventhal, and a great, great firm, merged with Ernst & Young, of course. Mm-hmm. But Leventhal, that was fantastic experience. That's where I met Mr. David Chan. I should say David R. Chan. But anyway, you have eaten probably over more than 6,300 Chinese restaurants by now, right?
Right. We're up to about 6,650, yeah.
Now, let me ask you a question. I've read a lot of the stuff you sent over, and I knew a lot of the stuff anyway. But, of course, you've been on, the front page of LA Times, I think you said?
Right. The front page, column one story, yeah.
Huffington Post has picked your stuff up. You're in a movie now. In Search of General?
In Search of General Tso. It's a documentary which played to sellout crowds earlier this year at the Tribeca Film Festival.
Ooh.
And it's slated for theatrical release and video on demand on January 2nd.
Excellent. We'll have to review that movie.
Do you know who picked it up? Which?
Yes, it's IFC Sundance.
Oh, okay. Great.
Oh, yeah. That'd be fantastic. And so you have a part in there, huh?
Yeah, well, it's a documentary, and it's ostensibly it's about the search for the origins of the dish known as General Tso's chicken. They start off, they interview a lot of people in New York saying how they love the dish, and the scene switched to Hunan province where General Tso, who was a real general, where he lived, and they asked the people there about General Tso's chicken, and you just get a bunch of puzzled looks.
Oh, wow.
So on the surface, it's about where the dish came from, how it became so popular, and exactly what its origin was. But really, on a deeper level, it really is a chronicle of the history of the Chinese in America and the racism which the Chinese community in America met and overcame in the 19th and 20th century.
Oh, wow.
And interestingly, at the particular screening of the movie I attended at Tribeca, I happened to be the only interviewee in the film that was present at that screening. So the director of the film, Ian Chaney, called me on stage for the full Q&A after the film.
Oh, wow.
And the first thing I did was to thank him for telling our story, the story of the Chinese Americans in his film. So that was really a great thing.
That's cool. I'm looking forward to seeing that. I think that would be a really good one. We'll probably review that one when it comes out, no question about it. Now, you started the spreadsheet when? What year was it? It was decades ago, right?
Right, because, you know me, even back in, 1980, my hobby was going to different Chinese restaurants and just trying the food. At some point in time, it was actually in the late 1980s, I decided, I better write down where I've been because the number at that time was only in the hundreds.
Right.
But it had gotten so large that, I didn't want to go to the same restaurant twice if I didn't have to.
Right.
So I started writing them down. And then about 25 years ago, when I got my first personal computer and got my first database program, I decided, hey, you know, I'm an accountant like you are.
Right.
And, you know, a convenient way to keep track of where I was going would just be put it on a spreadsheet. So from that spreadsheet, then as time went on, it got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And then I was up at 6,000. This was in a couple years ago. It was just past 6,000 Chinese restaurants. And I was corresponding with this food writer named Clarissa Wei. And I just casually mentioned to her that, hey, you know, I've been to 6,000 Chinese restaurants and all that. And she says, has anybody written a story about you? And my response was, why? You know, who would be interested in that? But she saw a story in there. So, like, she interviewed me on a Friday. On a Monday, she posted her article about me and my eating adventures. The next day, it got picked up by Huffington Post, which, you know, kind of made sense because, you know, it's the type of story that I could see foodies having an interest in.
Yeah.
But then a few days later, I get this message from my cousin who says, hey, you know, you're the number one story on the people.com website. And like, wow, what's going on?
I saw that too, yeah.
Yeah, and then and it got picked up by, you know, all kinds of celebrity gossip websites, and it's been crazy in the last 2.5 years.
It's been amazing. Now, real quickly, on the spreadsheet, did you just put the name and the address, or did you give it a rating too, so you sort of know what was good, what were good ones, what were not so good Chinese restaurants?
Well, I started eating when I started working at Leventhal in '73. But I didn't start the list until the mid-1980s. So I had I had to retroactively recreate the list.
Oh, gotcha.
So because of that, my list is restricted to name, address, city, and date.
But you have a pretty good memory there. I know how good you are with many tax issues and accounting and all that stuff, but you probably remember your top 10, right?
Yeah, that's interesting because people hear that I've been to 6,000 Chinese restaurants, and they kind of assume that I'm a foodie, which I'm not. I don't photograph my food or anything like that, or that I'm a Chinese food expert. That's not really true either because, you know, I'm more interested in trying the restaurant than trying the food.
Gotcha.
But there is this assumption that, you know, I'm this Chinese food expert. So as soon as the article about my having gone to 6,000 Chinese restaurants was published, I get a message from the Asia Society in New York, and it says, hey, we read about you. Could you do a listing of the top 10 restaurants in the United States?
Ooh.
Okay, so fine. You know, I've been to Chinese restaurants all over the country, been to all the Chinatowns. So I probably have a good handle comparatively on how Chinese food is in New York and California, San Francisco, and all that. So I came up with my top 10 list, which is basically all 10 restaurants were in California. Number one was Koi Palace in Daly City, California. Number two was Sea Harbor in Rosemead, California, and then down the line. When I wrote that article, I felt that I needed to explain to the editor why all the restaurants were in California. None were in New York, which has a large Chinese population. And so, you know, I had this side commentary and basically said some not-so-nice things about Chinese food in New York.
Mm.
Okay, she runs the article with my commentary.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. And then I was like, immediately, I'm public enemy number one in New York.
Oh, geez.
I mean, there was this one website. There was 10 pages of posts from New Yorkers attacking me. Now, what I didn't realize is that because I said all these things about New York, it created a lot of controversy, and that particular article got a lot of attention. I've subsequently found out that that article received 3,200 likes on Facebook and was tweeted about 300 times.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, those are numbers. I've written dozens of articles since then, but those are... That one article, probably the readership combined exceeds the readership for all my other articles combined.
See, it's controversy helps. Dave, can you stay on the line? We'd love to talk to you about a few more minutes. We're coming up to a hard break, but can we get you for another 5 minutes right at 10?
Sure.
Because I want to talk about Phoenix as well. And we're talking to David Chan, a celebrity diner, of course, an attorney and a CPA out of one of the prestigious firms, CPA firms, in the country. And we'll be right back with more on Breakthrough Entertainment.
And if you eat beans, you'll fart on Santa's lap, as the little stinkers tell you in this song.
And we'll be right back.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
At Birenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
This is 1480.
I've still got to bake my Christmas pie.
I've got to get Dad a lousy tie.
Christmas crowds is what a hype.
No time left to procrastinate.
To move your ass.
And let me pass.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Entertainment live on 1480 AM KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Dave Isaac alongside Joseph J. Erdo.
Ho, ho, ho.
And there you are, Santa Claus again. Greg Isaac.
Hello.
And Eric Reinert just left the building. He'll be right back momentarily. What song is this?
This is The Simpsons Nutcracker from The Simpsons a couple years ago, actually.
The Simpsons?
Yeah.
I don't remember this. It's a cute song, though.
Yeah. They, you know, it's fun.
It's a fun song. And,
Was that Bobby? I think that was Bobby.
No, not Bobby. Oh, Trisha's in the building. Here she comes. Okay. Anyway, we were talking to my good friend, all the way back from 1980, David Chan, a celebrity diner, as well as an attorney CPA, a fabulous one, too, I might say. And we're talking about his experience of eating over more than over 6,300 Chinese restaurants. And so has it, real quickly on the New York situation, has that sort of calmed down a little bit, Dave?
Yes, and I've also kind of maybe tried to make peace with the people in New York, because I have said some nice things about a few Chinese restaurants in New York in some of my articles. So I think that's calmed down.
Yeah, well, that's good. But, you know, hey, when you're a celebrity like you, this is going to happen things like that. We've gotten hate mail as well, haven't
yes, we have.
Joseph J. Yeah. Yes, we have.
Kirk Cameron.
Yeah, okay. No, you were in favor. Oh, that's why you got hate mail, because you were in favor of him. Yeah. All right, anyway, now you have a great article out in menuism.com, menuism.com, on the Phoenix situation in terms of Chinese food. I thought it was really interesting where there's still a restaurant that was established in 1928, Singhai Cafe. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right, it's just like a block south of downtown Phoenix. It's located adjacent to what used to be old Phoenix Chinatown, but that was torn down in the 1940s, and I think that's where U.S. Airways Center is now.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But they moved just two blocks away, and they're still in business serving mid to early 20th century Chinese food, which was food from Toisan. A little known fact is that from the first 100 years of Chinese presence in the United States, that almost all the Chinese in America came from this one very small rural region called Toisan. Mm. And by analogy, it'd be like if all the Americans in China came from Prescott. I mean, that's how regionalized the Chinese-American population was. So because of that, the Chinese food that most Americans grew up with was a really odd form of Cantonese food, which was basically, if you went to China, most Chinese wouldn't recognize it. So that's just a quirk of history that that kind of food became well known in the United States as Chinese food.
That's amazing. It's a great article, though, and you talk about the Chinese Cultural Center as well, but that's such a small area. And of course, when you come down here, you and I usually try new Chinese restaurants. And so what are some of your favorites out here in the Phoenix area, Chandler area, the surrounding area here in Phoenix?
Yeah, well, most of the good Chinese restaurants are in Chandler, also adjacent Mesa, and some in Tempe. I really like Tao Garden on Alma School Road. That's a really, really good Hong Kong-style Chinese restaurant. Like I said, originally all Chinese food in the United States was Cantonese, but more recently you've seen with changes in immigration laws, which from 1882 to 1943 prohibited most Chinese from coming to the United States. Mm. After 1965, they loosened up the immigration laws, so you had Chinese from all parts of Asia come to the United States, and now you're seeing authentic regional cuisines of all kinds all over the U.S. and in Phoenix and Chandler. China Magic Noodle House on Dobson Road has really great handmade noodles and dumplings. Mm. There's a couple of Sichuan-style restaurants, Sichuan Palace and Sichuan Garden in Chandler. Really good, authentic Sichuan-style food. On Alma School Road, there's a place called Cho's Kitchen, which has Northeast Chinese-style food. It's something you really didn't see much in the United States until, maybe 10 years ago. And you don't see it in too many cities. You see it in L.A., you see it in San Francisco, you see it in New York, and you see it here in Phoenix.
Wow. And the Knee House you introduced me to, and that is very good for food. And that's in Phoenix, however.
Right. That's in the northern part of Phoenix, actually.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead, Tricia.
Hi, this is Tricia.
Oh, your mic. There you go. Yeah. Start over.
Oh, hi. This is Tricia. Sorry,
hi.
I was late getting here. I was so excited that I got here while you were still on the air. But, it was interesting that you mentioned that, because when I first went to Beijing, I was surprised that the food that I always thought of as Chinese food was not actually well known in China, at least in that part. So are you really seeing a lot more variety as you're going to these various Chinese restaurants, or are we so ensconced that they'll maybe have Mandarin and Cantonese or Sichuan with, a different type?
I think it depends where you are. Your places like LA and San Francisco, the change is dramatic. I mean, it's a sea change. Even in 1960, I'd say 99.9% of the Chinese restaurants in the United States were Cantonese. in the L.A. area. Just did a survey of the Chinese restaurants that opened up last year. 10% were Cantonese.
Wow.
I'd say almost half were Sichuanese. And when I say Sichuan, not the type of Sichuan, this what they call faux Sichuan food that came out of New York in the 1970s. And Dave, your twice cooked pork kind of falls in that definition.
Oh, does it?
It's not really. It's Sichuan style, but it's really not authentic.
Wow.
Okay. And now you're getting the real stuff, and this is a result of that's where a lot of the wealth is being created these days in Sichuan. And if you're wealthy in China, one of the things you think about doing is like buying a place in L.A., maybe moving there, maybe sending your kids and your wife there. So we're just seeing an explosion in non-Cantonese cuisine in the U.S. It's starting to occur in Phoenix, certainly very, very dominant in the L.A. area.
Wow, and we can't let you go without talking about a place, a destination that we do a lot of reviews of shows. In fact, The Temptations, George Lopez, Terry Fader, that's coming up later in the show where we reviewed them last week. But Las Vegas, the Chinese food in Las Vegas, your comments.
Yeah, I wrote an article about that because there's a kind of like a rumor going around that they have the best Chinese food in the country. That's probably true, but it's not available to the public. They have special dinners for high rollers.
Interesting.
And they bring in, talented chefs from overseas to cook for those people. But for you and me off the street, Las Vegas has good Chinese food. I would rank it, probably in the top 10 in the United States. I actually think the Chinese food in Phoenix is better. I rate Chinese food in Phoenix comparable to that in New York. I mean, there aren't as many Chinese restaurants in Phoenix per capita and in total, but I think if you look at the top tier of Chinese restaurants in Phoenix, it really compares favorably with those in New York.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, I hope you're not broadcasting New York because I had enough trouble with those people.
worldwide.
I have another quick question.
Yeah.
I love New York. What are you talking about? No, I'm just teasing. Salt and pepper, like salt and pepper scallops or salt and pepper, is that a particular type of Chinese food or is that just Americanized?
No, that is an authentic dish coming from somewhere in the northern part of China.
Wow, the reason Tricia brings that up, we just had that in Las Vegas at Orleans
Koji
Hotel.
The Koji restaurant at the Orleans.
And it was fantastic. I've never seen that dish, salt and pepper somewhat fried scallops. It was fantastic, and I've never seen it in any Chinese restaurant. Have you seen this?
Oh, yeah, actually, I guess you didn't make it to ABC in L.A. Chinatown with our old friend Donald Lamb, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I went to ABC once, but that was a long time ago.
Yeah, and even in the mid-1980s, they had a killer salt and pepper calamari.
Oh, that would be good as well. But it is fantastic, I got to tell you. So this was at the Orleans Hotel. What was it called?
Koji.
And I don't know. You may want to try it. That dish was darn good, I will say.
I was actually surprised because I'm actually from San Diego, and I've had salt and pepper, pork chops, salt and pepper chicken, all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the first time where it was so light, so delicious, just melt in your mouth.
Fantastic.
Scallops, not too much breading. It was just phenomenal.
Oh, it was.
It surprised me because I got nervous when I saw that this restaurant served Japanese and Chinese food. I was like, ooh.
Yeah, which can be a warning sign. Yeah,
yeah. But actually, I was really surprised.
Yeah,
so.
It was excellent. Now, Dave, where can they read your stuff? Do you have your own blog? I know you're on other things like menuism.com. Any other places can they read all about your stuff?
Yes, I have a blog. It's called Chandavkal's Blog, which is Chandavkal. I'm the only Chandavkal on the internet, so just plug that in, you'll find it. And if you're wondering, the KL stands for Kenneth Leventhal.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
that's right.
Uh-huh.
So spell that out again. So
Chandavkal.
Gotcha. And that's .com.
Chandavkal.blogspot.com.
Oh, so, okay. Perfect.
But yeah, you do a Google search for Chandavkal and you just pick up the stuff I write on menuism and my own blog.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Good articles. And Dave, it was so nice for you to call in today. And we go back a long way. Appreciate your friendships, your friendship. And we'll have you on again soon, because it'd be great to continue this discussion. Great Chinese food throughout the country.
Okay, it's always great to talk with you, Dave.
Hey, thanks a lot, Dave.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Dave
Thank
Chan,